Studio Funk.
Hello. Hi, were you busy? Oh, I see. Hey, I called you up last night, but you weren't there. Oh, you were. Well, hey, look, I'm gonna call you back later on. But remember, I still love you. Call you up on the telephone. One surprise, you weren't at home. You said to me that you never heard me. I believe that you won't.
Too long ago, I know you shared something on your Instagram. I think it's for a story, and you might have did a post about it as well. How you got to spend time with two guys who, you know, you had the pleasure of spending some time with them, and even one man was doing a little bit of shuffle on the dance floor.
Oh, yeah.
You know, it's beautiful to see, and I think you know, to people, because I always look at it like of like a scenario of, you know, we will eventually become elders and high seniors in that regards, and might be quite nice, you know, if people in the future, like, can you imagine, like, someone come up to you and be like, hey man, are you Mr. Big Happy? And you're just like, yeah. And yeah. Like, I'm discovering like your shows from 2022. And you know, and people just in general, people just appreciate being valued and being listened to. And I think that's the reason why as well these people are just willing to spend time with you and just like share more with you as well, because they see it like you're not coming in there just to be like, yo man, you got records? And just like,
yeah, exactly,
hand over some cash and just walk out again. It's like, it's not like that. It's I'm sure you want to know more about stories around that time they were recording, what it was like back then. and places they might have performed these music as well, because a lot of the times, you know, people were like performing these tracks live as a little circuit or tour around the area maybe at the time as well.
Yeah, those moments go a really long way. That particular group that you're talking about is a local band. They're called Sparkle City Band. They were a short-lived band that started, I think, in 79, but didn't do their recording until early 80s. And this goes back to timing, right? So I know they have been the main member was contacted a few years ago, but he just wasn't having it. You know, he was in a place where he just didn't want to be bothered and didn't really go anywhere. I heard he was really difficult to talk with. But you know, that doesn't stop me. I'm like, well, you know, I'll give it a try and see what I can do. I learned about all of this after the fact, like after I actually chatted with the group. But you know, like any city you go to, you have your record collectors who are devoted, you know, to all the local stuff. You know, like for example, Daniel, he's devoted to all Memphis stuff. You know, you got all the homies up in Michigan who are all devoted to, you know, outskirts of Michigan, or folks that are just deep into Detroit stuff. You know, homies in Illinois are all focused on Chicago stuff. You know, so. Like me being in California and being in the Bay Area, you can't really help but to want to find as much and all of the Bay Area music that you can, because the Bay Area was cracking, man. It was, you know, home to a lot of stuff. Like you had the soul scene, the jazz scene, you had the, you know, the psychedelic hippie stuff, you had the 90s rave, the hip hop, like everything out here had its own take on it. So you could imagine the free spirited folks that were out here, mm-hmm. coming off of the literal high of the 70s and just experimenting and doing all this crazy stuff in the 80s. It was a really special moment. And this group, Sparkle City Band, they were kind of a product of coming off of the 70s and doing this kind of like live band performance stuff. And when I contacted them, I'll mention a little bit about what I'm doing. I'm working on a project right now. It's going to be an amazing project that I'm kind of putting all my energy into. And it's going to be a representation of Bay Area music scene.
Nice.
But I can't get too far into the details yet, but just be on the lookout for that. It's going to be an amazing, amazing thing. When I pitched this idea to Sparkle City Band, and how I got in contact with them was it kind of touches on what I meant earlier about like diving deep and learning the research of trying to find the artist. You know, I was calling a bunch of numbers, you know, doing all I can. And I finally got a hold of one of the members' sons, and I was talking to the son. I left a message and he actually texted me back and he was like, "Oh, that's my dad. Can I give you a call?" So he gave me a call and we were chatting and he was talking about his dad a little bit and he got a little emotional about it. And he was like, "Man, I haven't talked to my dad in, you know, over a decade. Like we just didn't see eye to eye. He was doing his own thing and, you know, just didn't chat with him." And he was like, "I didn't even realize he put a record out." So I played the record for him. You know, and I was kind of really emotional about like how he was taking it. You know, he was like, "Man, this is a beautiful song," and I was really excited to just get that playing. And he was like, "Man, let's stay in touch. Like, I'm gonna try to find him for you, and just give me a couple days." And so. A couple days had passed and he was like, "Well, here's a number. You might want to try this number. I haven't talked to him, but you know, I'm gonna give him a call and see if it's okay before. So just let me call him and then see if it's okay." And so he called his dad, and that was the first time he talked to his dad in over 10 years, which was crazy. And so, you know, it was this bridge of music that kind of helped facilitate that. And from what I understand now, they've been chatting and they're kind of making amends. And to me, that's great. But so one of the, his dad, who is Larry, who is the main guy from the group, he actually gave me a call, and you know, I was talking to him and telling him what I was doing, and he was like, "Man, let's, you know, let's do this. Like, this is a really good idea. Let's get it going." And so, you know, after a week or so, I got a hold of one of the other band members who he hadn't talked to in a while. And his name's Ivory. Ivory now lives in Stockton. Larry lives in low-income housing out here in San Francisco. Both are kind of, you know, doing their thing, but, you know, obviously kind of struggling. And so we're talking about it and trying to really facilitate this whole thing between them, and, you know, just having multiple conversations about them. You know, there are a couple conversations where they felt uncertain about it, and I had to reconvince them. And yeah, there's a lot of that back and forth that you have to do sometimes, and just really let them know who you are as a person, and that
reassure them. And yeah,
exactly. Like, you don't, you know, you're not trying to take them for a ride. And you know, weeks had passed, and we set up some time to come up here and, you know, go over the contract. I had gotten the contract all set up by the label, and you know, Ivy drove up here from Stockton, and he met up with Larry, and, you know, these guys don't know how to take Uber. They're like, man, I'm gonna hop on a bus to meet you where you need to go. And so I'm like, are you sure, man? Like, I'll pick you up. They were like, no, man, I don't want to, you know, trouble you. And so I had set up this reservation at a really nice restaurant out in the Dog Patch area, which is kind of like the industrial side.
Dog Patch.
Show. Yeah, it's a cool area. It's, you know, it has its moments. And so I set up a reservation for us to have lunch there at this really cool Italian spot. And so I'm like, hey, man, you guys meet me here, and I'll see you guys at noon. And so about 30 minutes after the reservation, they called me, and they were like, man, we're lost. They were like, we can't find this place. So at that point, I'm like, well, where are you at? And they were like, we're close to 16th and Mission. And I was like, just get off the bus. I'll go pick you both up. And so, you know, I go to the owner of the restaurant, and I'm like, hey, man, I'm sorry. You know, I have some guests that I have to go pick up. They're lost. And they're like, oh, it's okay. We'll push your reservation back. And so I go and pick them up. And I see, you know, I call Larry, and then I see someone answer the phone, and I'm like, oh, that has to be Larry. So I'm like, are you wearing this? And he's like, you know, and he comes over, and, you know, Larry has a garbage bag with him filled with some random shit, man, like clothes and trinkets and stuff. So, you know, but he's dressed to a T, man. He's a very stylish guy.
Yeah.
And so I'm like, hey, man, where's Ivory at? And he's like, well, Ivory's in... he's looking for some water. He'll be here in like 10 minutes. You know, 15 minutes comes by. No Ivory. 20 minutes. We're still waiting in the car. And then he finally comes. And Ivory's kind of slow paced, man. He's like, you know, he's doing things at his pace, which is pretty funny. But just to see them interact was amazing. Like, you know, wow. Just because they hadn't like really kicked it in a while. And so we were driving, man. We're going to the restaurant. We get there, and they were just so excited about it, and we were just talking about everything, man. And Ivory was like, man, this is the best meal I ever had in my life. And he was like, thank you, brother. And I was like, dude, come on, man, like, I got you. Like, we're gonna figure this stuff out. Like, your song is so good. Like, I want people to have access to it, and I want more people to know about it and to learn about it and learn about you as a group. So we're you know, having lunch, and I'm telling them, like, yo, let's go drive around the city. I'm gonna take you by a couple of record stores that are really you know, staples of the city, and just come and check out some of the records there. So our first stop was Groove Merchants. You know, shout out to Chris. Luke, we go there. Chris is there. There's a couple folks in the shop, and we're just there. And Ivory's a talkative guy, man. He was he was asking Chris all kinds of questions about the records on the walls. He was like, "Man, I know this guy. You know, I played with this guy."
Wow.
It was pretty amazing, and he was like, just really invested, because Ivory actually grew up on Haight Street, where Haight and Pierce went right there by Groove Merchant. So he saw his childhood home right there. He got so emotional, man. It was such a weird like experience. I didn't know that, you know, and he had mentioned it. And then, so I go and take photos of him in front of his house, and he's telling me all these stories.
Man.
I mean, cause that house now is easily like $3 to $4 million house, you know? And I was like, man, this is, I bet you wish your dad held on to that, huh? He was like, yeah, man, but you know how things are. And so, you know, we're hanging out there, and then I'm like, yo, let's make one more stop. We'll stop by Original Vinyl, you know, shout out to Matt. So we go there, and at this point, I was like, I didn't set this up at all. This was just, this is crazy how it happened, man. Like, I actually knew that Matt had a copy of the record because we had talked about it a few weeks before,
mm-hmm.
but I didn't tell him I was going by the store. I did not know he was going to have it on him, you know, because this is from his personal collection. So we go to the store, and I go up to the counter, and I say what up to him, and Larry and Ivory are behind me, and I'm like, hey, dude, do you know who this is? You know, I'm kind of fucking with him, and I'm like, do you know who this is? And I'm like, dude, this is a Sparkle City band. And his eyes just kind of lit up, dude. And I was like, dude, this is dope. So, you know, they introduced themselves and stuff. And then he's like, man, I think I have the record with me right now. Like, and he pulls out his little stash, and he has it. So, and Larry and Ivory have not seen a physical copy of this record in decades. Like, they have no copies of the record. Like, they were doing their thing, man. They were partying. They were just really involved in what they do, and moved around a lot. So the copies got lost. All the copies that were there ended up at, you know, local record stores and just wherever records ended up, you know, over time. And so they were there. The record was there. You know, we were there. And so Matt puts it on the loudspeaker, and they just started dancing, man. They were like performing, like they were in sync. They were doing a couple, like for the whole duration of the song, man. I was just like, I wanted to put my phone down and not record, just to experience it,
which
I did for a little bit. But like, I was like, man, I got to capture some of this. This is going to be an amazing
moment, isn't it? Yeah,
exactly. And man, it was a really beautiful moment. And just to kind of see these guys go into this mode of performance and, you know, reciting the songs and stuff, and like hearing Larry's voice in real life, because Larry was the singer on it, and Ivory was one of the musicians. And so it was just, and he did some backup too, but it was a really special moment, and some of the folks in the shop were just, you know, they stopped what they were doing and they were just watching what was happening. And that was a really cool moment. And you know, after we left Originals, they were just appreciative of the whole day. And you know, we got everything all set up, man. I got them their advance, you know, for the work that we're doing. And
that's incredible, man.
We've been in a lot of conversations since, but shout out to them, man. Really amazing group, and can't wait to put their stuff out.
That's beautiful, man. It's the most beautiful story I've ever heard. Serious, man.
Yeah.
That's wonderful, man. Wonderful.
But you know, if you think about it, like, this is just one story from one group. You know, there are literally thousands of musicians out there who have crazy stories, man. Like, I can't wait to link up with you in person and just have a beer and chat with some of the other stories I've had, man. Like,
man.
I'm talking about stories about like James Brown and like stories that are linked to well-known people.
What?
You know, it's crazy stuff, dude. Crazy stuff.
I look forward to that. I think we'll have to have more than one beer because we'll be there for a while. We'll be there for a while.
But you know, man, there's just so many amazing stories out there that people, you know, musicians were so tied to their communities and doing everything they can to just stay alive as a musician that they all kind of crossed at some point. You know? And, you just get so many valuable stories that connects the music industry at you know the core level. Mm-hmm. And the part that really I think is why I do what I do is because it really saddens me to think that these stories will be lost if no one's telling them. Because these musicians are getting up in age, man. They're like easily in their 60s, you know, from 60s to 80s. Mm. And most of them have passed away. So sometimes you're talking to family members. But to me, thinking about like, you know, these stories dying with anyone associated with the group, or, you know, sometimes the records get put out to an estate sale and or get thrown away. It's just crazy to me to think about. So when I find these artists, I make sure I document as much as I can. And you know, I try to get as many records as I can. I actually, every time I hop on a call with a musician, I record the call. So I have so many phone conversations recorded, just as an archive part of it. But you know, it's all part of the love, man. It's just this obsession I have about talking about the artist and playing their music and finding the connections on what was being how they were being inspired by, or like what technologies were inspiring them with music of the time. It's just a really interesting way of documenting the journey of something so natural that we do as humans, which, you know, is creating sounds, creating music.
Baby.
I know we mentioned it briefly earlier about your crew called Parish Council, and we definitely got to shed some light on this, and definitely want to give a shout out to one of the members of your crew, Mr. Cool Rao, who is also a great record collector as well on the scene. And also, I know recently he just was featured on a show on NTS as well. And yeah, I just wanted to know, like, how did it form together as a little crew, as a DJ crew?
Yeah, man, it was kind of the brainchild of my homie Rich. Rich, he's from the UK. I can't remember the actual city. It's neighboring to Scunthorpe.
Scunthorpe.
It's up there. So James Poxon is actually from Scunthorpe.
Okay.
And it's the neighboring city. I can't remember, but anyway, he's from up, I guess, north,
to be honest, I was going to say, no, to be honest, for everyone in the UK, we always look at Scunthorpe as just north anyway, so that's all good.
I guess, the city he lives in is like the city that's by the ocean on that side.
Right.
So Rich, I used to work with Rich. I still work with Rich. He was living in San Francisco for a couple of years. He just moved back to London like a year ago, so he's out there. But Rich is an amazing designer, man. Like, this guy is like, he's the guy behind all our flyers. You know, I collaborate with him a little bit, but for the most part, he's doing all the heavy lifting.
Right.
Rich is also a dope DJ. You know, he has his hands in a lot of stuff. He actually is the guy who designed the Airbnb logo. Just a little plug there for him. He's dope. He's dope. So me and Rich became really good friends. We would like play work part. You know, we'd be booked to do our work parties and stuff. And we just started DJing together and just really started vibing out, man. And my wife, Erica, shout out to Erica. She's been a big part of like helping us book parties. I mean, she used to book all my parties when I was trying to be a club DJ back in the day. Now she's kind of turned her hands to like, you know, helping us book parties here. So we landed a monthly at a local spot, a local dive bar out here called Rock Bar, which is, you know, it's one of the oldest bars out here in San Francisco. It used to be a brothel run by women back in the days. So it's got like a historical landmark presence. So it's a really cool spot. So this was like a platform for us to start DJing together and, you know, just building something together. And so Rich was like, yo, dude, like, let's start a crew name. Let's go through a couple things. And so he had this idea of using the words Parish Council and, you know, just, you know, parish being a gathering and a council being somebody who educates in a space that was kind of like what we're doing with our music. We're educating, you know, we're gathering together to listen to it. So I thought it was a really cool name.
That's dope, man.
At that point, I had introduced Rich to Raul, and I met Raul a couple years before. So I've known Raul, maybe it hasn't even been that long, man, to be honest with you. It's been maybe 3 or 4 years. And about 3 or 4 years. And I met Raul through a mutual friend, my homie Gino. And we just started vibing, man. It was a really cool friendship. And we were talking about a lot of things musically, and we were connecting on a lot of levels, and we were just really geeking out and just getting to learn about Raul as a DJ was pretty dope, man. He's like, he's a technical DJ, so he's got cuts for days, you know. He comes from like a family of music enthusiasts. Like, his dad is super big into jazz and stuff, and one of his dad's like best friends was also a DJ and took Raul under his wing. So Raul got some really amazing upbringings when it comes to music. So that's why when you hear any of his mixes, he has like such a good ear, you know, and he's able to executed technically. And just being in the Bay Area, you're like given this energy out here to like do things the Bay Area way, you know? So you have this, there's a definite uniqueness about folks that grew up out here, and you know, he's from here. So, when me and Raul were kicking it, we just started vibing, man. And we were, you know, we really got into record collecting together and just started building our collections together. And so I was talking to Rich about Raul, and we finally got to, you know, introduce them, and, you know, it was just all love, man. And we started putting this crew together, and, you know, Raul just kind of fell into the fold naturally, and you know, the rest is history. And shortly after that, the homie Alex was coming around more and DJing, so you know, he got down with us, and so it's just been us four that just been really, really pushing it. And you know, Rich moved back to the UK, so he's not really DJing as much anymore, but he's really wanting to focus on maybe doing some more like swag or just doing anything on the design side of stuff, and he's kind of pushing that direction. So, you know, we're trying to figure out how to keep this thing going, because obviously being in the crew is tough, man. It's like, especially like, you know, when everyone has their own pace at how they operate, you know, you want to promote yourself, but you also want to promote the crew.
And yeah.
like keep everything all on, you know, just on the level playing field. But I think it's the way we do it, I think it works because we all have our own motivations and we all like keep things connected. Like, you know, for example, whenever I have opportunities that I feel add on folks from the crew, like, let's do it. You know, I'm more the merrier kind of guy. So I think I get that from my wife, actually. But yeah, man, it's been a fun journey. And, you know, like, we actually have a gig tomorrow together, me, Raul, and Alex. We moved our nights back to Friday nights at Rock Bar, which we're really excited about. Because, right, we started the night actually, like, 4 months before the pandemic. And we had it cracking, man. We, like, the party was, it was, like, building. And we were like, shit, this is going to be dope. So then the pandemic started, and it kind of, like, fucked everything up. And so when we were able to go back, you know, we're like slowly building stuff and stuff back up. But the city's still, you know, in this state where people are going out, but because they don't go out so often, they're very selective as to where they go. So it's, you get these weird crowds sometimes, but it's slowly building back up again. And I think Fridays were very crucial for us because it was the crowd that would come out after work.
Yeah.
And it'd be, you know, everybody wants to get, you know, have fun after work. But yeah, that's kind of the short, man, how me and Raul met. I mean, we vibe on a lot of levels. He's a really, really cool dude. I mean, he's got a definite style of his own, and it's pretty dope. I mean, we've traveled a lot together. I think the first gig we played together outside of San Francisco was in LA, when we got to go play at Gold Line at you know, Peanut Butter Wolf Spot. And the day before that, we you know, Chris, that's Peanut Butter Wolf, for those that don't know, he invited us over to his house, and we got to go through his record room, and he was like, yo, man, you know, go through whatever you guys want. And he was just putting a set together because he had a gig that night with J-Rock and Chica Soho and Melissa. They were all playing at the Lodge. I think they're playing that same party tomorrow in LA, if I'm not mistaken. So anyhow, we were over there going through his records, and me and Raul kept looking back at each other like, fuck, he has this. Dude, it was crazy. And you know, we pull it out, and Wolf would hear us, and he'd be like, oh, which one's that? And just, you know, just casually, he'd be like, oh yeah, you know, I got that, like, you know, 15 years ago.
I
found a box of those, you know. like he found a box of those Love Bone band, that Texas record.
Right.
Crazy record, man. Crazy record. But I guess he had found a box when he was digging I think it was out in Texas where he found it, but he had given them to various friends, and you know, no one wanted him back then. He was telling us the story, and so now he's trying to get some of them back, considering what they're going for. I think the last copy sold for like $3,000 or something.
Jeez.
But yeah, and it was a really dope moment for like me and Roel to be at another fellow, you know, Bay Area head, you know, Wolf's from San Jose. It was cool to be there and just kind of experience that together with him, because I know Roel's huge hip hop head, and he just, like, as deep as I am with, like, you know, the 80s stuff and the stories behind that, Roel is equally with hip hop. I mean, he's got like all the knowledge behind samples or soft records that we're used to sample, you know, for other, you know, the sample name.
Yeah, of course, man, of course.
But yeah. It was dope, dude. And, you know, he's a fun guy, definitely to kick it with.
Yeah, big shout out to Roel, the homie, man, the homie. And yeah, just promote his recent mix that he did on NTS as well. I think the archive just went up, so just definitely check that out.
Yeah, absolutely.
This girl is out to play tonight.